ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Imagine getting treated for a nasty infection, only to be told it'll likely come back again and again and again. That's the reality for millions of women around the world struggling with a super common condition called bacterial vaginosis, or BV. No one knew why BV seemed to be this bacterial boomerang until now.
We have finally unravelled the mystery around bacterial vaginosis.
Hi, I'm Belinda Smith, and this is Lab Notes, the show that dissects the science behind new discoveries and current events. If you search most public health websites, they'll tell you that bacterial vaginosis is not a sexually transmitted infection. So the person with the vagina is the one who gets the treatment. Now, at this point, if you're thinking, oh, well, I've got a penis, this story is not relevant to me, think again. Today, we're speaking to Professor Katrina Bradshaw, who spent the past 20 years pursuing a hunch, one that would overturn a long-held belief about how bacterial vaginosis is transmitted. A quick heads up, this episode discusses genitals and sex, in a strictly scientific sense, of course.
BV, we tend to call it, is actually a microbiome disorder. So it's a condition where women's optimal vaginal bacteria, which are called lactobacilli, seem to deplete and in fact disappear and get replaced by a whole lot of mixed bacteria.
What are the symptoms of BV?
So bacterial vaginosis can be asymptomatic, so meaning no symptoms at all, but it is commonly associated with an abnormal vaginal discharge. It can be associated with a really fishy odour. And that odour is actually due to chemicals called amines, and they're quite volatile. So these bacteria produce these amines and they have a really fishy smell.
Wow.
And they've got horrid names like putrescine and cadaverine.
Oh, cadaverine.
So you can imagine, yeah. Oh. So it's a really unpleasant odour, and that actually can cause enormous distress to women.
And it's not just the smelly symptoms that are the problem.
So it increases the risk of catching sexually transmitted diseases. So chlamydia, gonorrhea, herpes, human papillomavirus, and also HIV. But it also increases the risk of transmitting HIV. If you are a woman with BV and with HIV, you are more likely to transmit to your male partner. So we actually see this with other sexually transmitted diseases as well. So it increases your risk of pelvic inflammatory disease, of losing a pregnancy, so miscarriage or spontaneous abort, premature birth, low birth weight babies. So it is not a nice condition to have. Having said that, it's common. It affects 1 in 3 women globally. And the majority of women do not go on to have serious complications. And I say that really as a clinician because it's quite sort of anxiety provoking to hear these.
Yes. Yeah, I can imagine so. Given it is so common.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. And so being a bacterial infection, I imagine antibiotics are the way to go?
Yeah, that's right. So all antimicrobial therapy is solely directed at the woman with the infection to treat her infection.
But a course of antibiotics doesn't always solve the problem once and for all. It's something Professor Bradshaw noticed more than 20 years ago when she was working in a sexual health centre.
What I was seeing in clinic was young women coming in with an explosive onset of BV with a brand new partner. They'd just hooked up with someone in the last week.
Then, while separated from their partner, these women would get antibiotics and the BV would go away. But then
got back together with them and their BV came back again. So there was a lot of evidence clinically, anecdotally, that, you know, BV was being acquired from new partners and recurrence was being driven by ongoing exposure to untreated partners.
Despite BV being so common, no one had done a proper study to find out who was most prone to recurrent BV. So in the 2000s, Professor Bradshaw did just that for a PhD.
To actually determine the recurrence rates, and to look at factors associated with recurrence. And recurrence was unbelievably high. Really, two-thirds of women had their BV back within 6 months, which is staggering. You wouldn't be very happy if you had pneumonia and you went to a doctor and, you know, there was a 2 out of 3 chance it was going to be back again.
No, you would not. And what Professor Bradshaw found was it was mostly women in heterosexual monogamous relationships who seemed to get BV over and over again. So,
were these women being reinfected from a sex partner? And that really was the beginning of this whole journey for me.
The idea that BV infection might be passed between sexual partners, so from penis to vagina, it wasn't new. Trials back in the 1980s treated infected women and gave their male partner antibiotics too, in the form of tablets. The hypothesis was that if he, and his penis, was responsible for reinfecting her, the tablet should clear everything up. But it didn't work. Her BV came back. So scientists assumed it wasn't a sexually transmitted infection. Case closed, right? Not for Professor Bradshaw.
I really had to set about on a sort of suite of studies to systematically prove that bacterial vaginosis was being transmitted between people. And so what I decided to do was to do a study in university students where they could anonymously complete a survey themselves and do self-collected samples, although we had plenty coming in as well to our service. And what we ended up with was about 500 university students with varying ranges of sexual activity. And we had a group who'd never been sexually active with other people. That was what they reported. A group who'd really not engaged in penile vaginal sex, but had engaged in what we referred to at the time, because this study is a bit old now, non-coital practices. And then...
So that's things like oral sex,
exactly,
sex toys,
yeah,
that kind of thing?
That's exactly right. Perhaps mutual masturbation and things like that. So then there was a group that had engaged in penile vaginal sex. We found all the BV in the group that engaged in penile vaginal sex. 3 cases
just
in
riddled
the
with it.
Non-coitals oh, and right. none in the other in the women who hadn't engaged in sex with other people. So that was fairly conclusive.
From there, Professor Bradshaw and her team conducted a stack of other studies. One surveyed and took swabs from women who have sex with other women and found participants who started the study BV-free really only got the infection with a new sexual partner.
Another pivotal point in all of this was HIV was a very big issue around the time that I was doing my PhD and I went to Kenya in the early 2000s. And I was very interested in the male circumcision trials.
While these trials were focused on HIV transmission, they also found female partners of circumcised men had a big reduction in BV risk.
So for me, the role of the foreskin became really obvious at that point, and I started to think about interventions that may address carriage of BV bugs in men under the foreskin as well as inside the urethra.
So began Professor Bradshaw's study into treating penises for BV as well as vaginas. And unlike the previous partner treatment studies, which only used oral antibiotics, this one also included an antibiotic cream.
We designed a partner treatment trial to treat men with a combination of an oral and topical antibiotic just for a week, simultaneously when the woman with BV is being treated with recommended therapies.
It wasn't the easiest job recruiting people for the study, like getting the partners, the penis owners, to participate.
It was really difficult, actually. It was really difficult. We saw rapid exiting of some men. I can tell you that the men who did participate were absolutely fantastic.
Good on them.
In a way, it was a bit of a litmus test. I sort of felt like saying, well, perhaps if he's not going to do this for you now, perhaps it's good to know that right now.
There's a big red flag waving in front of your face,
lady. Life's going to get a lot harder than this.
Professor Bradshaw and her team plan to recruit 350 couples for the study, but at around 160 couples, they stopped the trial. Not because it wasn't working, but because it was working extremely well.
So then it's not considered ethical to continue because you've got an intervention that works.
Okay, so what was the recurrence rate then in women who had this partner treatment at the same time?
Yeah, Certainly at 4 weeks, there was 70% less recurrence in the group that had partner treatment than the control group. And we followed women right out, and men right out to 12 weeks. And, you know, it was around 65% at that time.
So what the trial showed was that the bacteria that causes BV can lurk in the nooks and crannies of a penis. To get rid of those bacteria and to prevent that penis from reinfecting a partner, you really need an antibiotic cream. Oral antibiotics alone won't cut it.
What we have done is we have made the first inroads into improving cure for women through reducing reinfection and recurrence. But that is not the end. We need to start now really addressing persistence, dealing with eradicating BV in these women who really are failing to respond to simple first-line therapy.
Because there was a group of women who did get BV again, even after their partner was treated. Professor Bradshaw's not totally sure why that's the case, but one possibility could be the presence of an IUD or intrauterine device. Bacteria can cling to IUD strings and hide under a protective layer where antibiotics can't reach. Still, it sounds promising. So if you or your partner has BV, can you pop down to your GP and get on this treatment regimen tomorrow? Well, no, not yet anyway.
Once you change global guidelines and national guidelines, and that's going to happen over the next couple of years, then that will start to become just routine.
So yeah, there's still plenty to do.
We have this whole decade of work ahead of us, not only in high-income populations, but in low- and middle-income countries, where we can start to do things to address a burden of a condition that is staggeringly high with widespread sexual and reproductive health consequences for women and their children.
Should we start calling it bacterial
yes.
penisosis?
We need to get rid of vaginosis, don't we? We really do. It needs a new name, and this is part of the problem. And as one of our male partners eloquently said, you know, this is a shared responsibility.
That was Professor Katrina Bradshaw. She's a sexual health doctor at the Alfred Hospital in Melbourne and a researcher at Monash University. Professor Bradshaw and her team unveiled the results of that partner treatment study in the New England Journal of Medicine last week. And thanks for listening to Lab Notes on ABC Radio National, where every week we dissect the science behind new discoveries and current events. I'm Belinda Smith. This episode was produced on the lands of the Wurundjeri and Menang Noongar people. The show was produced by Fiona Pepper and mixed by Angie Grant. And we'd love to know what science newsy nuggets you'd like us to cover down the track. labnotes@abc.net.au. We'll catch you next week.
You've been listening to an ABC podcast. You can discover more ABC podcasts, live radio and exclusives on the ABC Listener.